Welcome to County Reads on County FM. I'm Lynn Pickering, and we're pleased to partner with the Prince Edward County Public Library to present this wonderful annual event, County Reads, that unfortunately was unable to be held in April because of the COVID-19 lockdown. Now, before we begin, special thanks to our sponsors today, Books & Company, Veenstra Plumbing, Elizabeth Crombie Real Estate Team, and Lockyer's Country Gardens. You're going to hear four presenters, each one passionate about the book they've chosen, and each one vying for your vote. We'll give you details on how to cast your vote for your favorite at the end of the show, but now, here is our moderator, Ken Murray, to introduce our County Reads presenters. Hi, Ken.
Thank you, Lynn, and good afternoon to all our listeners. And I want to say welcome to our presenters today. We have four presenters presenting four fabulous books, and here in this new format, we're going to retain a lot of the old format that we do when we do this event in person. So I would like to invite our four presenters to imagine you're sitting on stage in front of about 200 to 300 people who want to hear everything you have to say. Quite frankly, there's quite a few more out there. But hey, we're not going to put the pressure on, but it is an important time to get everything together. County Reads is the show by the Prince Edward County Public Library, which asks the question, what is the one book you should read right now, this year, when these four contestants have chosen the book they think you have to read. Just before the show, their names were randomly placed in a glass and pulled out, and the order of presentation will be as follows. We will hear from Joan McBride, who will be presenting Woo, The Monkey Who Inspired Emily Carr by Grant Hayter Menzies. Following that, Shannon Cool will be presenting A Girl Named Lovely by Catherine Porter. And then later on in the show, Duncan Payne will be presenting The Marrow Thieves by Cherie Demoline. And finally, Richard Johnson will be presenting Bush Runner by Mark Bury. So I'll just go over the way this presentation will happen. Each contestant will have 5 minutes, a firm 5 minutes, and if you hear a chiming sound late in their presentation, you'll know they're getting close, to talk about why this is the book you must read. So you'll hear from each of them for their presentations. I then have one question that I will ask of each presenter to give a brief answer to. They're all going to get the same question, but they're not going to hear it until the time of. And then following that, we will wrap up with each presenter having 1 minute to give a final pitch for their book, and we'll have instructions on how you can vote. So, without going any further, I would like to introduce our first presenter. Joan McBride is a professional actor represented by Risler Talent in Montreal and living in Prince Edward County. She enjoys being in the studio for voiceover work almost as much as she loves being on stage. Since moving to Prince Edward County in 2014, Joan has been an active member of the performing arts community. Recent credits include Lucy Hopperstad in the County Roads Theatre Company production of On a First Name Basis in 2019, and Emily Dickinson in the County Roads Theatre production of The Belle of Amherst in 2017. She also played Margaret Jones in the Festival Players Shadow of a Doubt Collective production of Unjustly by Krista Dalby. That was in 2015 and again as a stage reading in 2017. In the summer of 2018, Joan was on the Music at Port Milford program with the Tokai String Quartet under the concert theme Phenomenal Woman, offering dramatic reading of poetry and prose selected to accompany works by Fanny Mendelssohn and other female composers. Joan also creates and directs the annual Remembrance Day Jazz Vespers and the popular series Christmas Stories, Songs, and Cookies at St. Mary Magdalene Church in Picton. Joan McBride will be presenting Woo, The Monkey Who Inspired Emily Carr by Grant Hayter Menzies. Well, welcome, Joan, and reminder that once she starts speaking, she will have 5 minutes.
Woo, The Monkey Who Inspired Emily Carr by Grant Hayter Menzies. I begin my enthusiastic support of this fabulous biography with a quote from a co-founder of the Born Free Foundation, Virginia McKenna. I quote, "This is an extraordinary, profound, poignant, and true story, brilliantly and fascinatingly told. Human and animal relationships are complex, and when they involve captive wild animals, troubling to say the least. I have almost never read a book which I longed to read again as soon as I had turned the last page. Such is the subtlety, sensitivity, and skill of Grant Hayter Menzies' storytelling." End quote. Well, what she said, especially the part about wanting to read the book again as soon as it was finished. Like a good theater production or a concert, one can never fully absorb all that is meaningful and inspiring in the first experience of that artistic expression. Hayter Menzies' writing, and indeed his captivating subject matter, leaves one wanting to know more. Emily Carr, 1871 to 1945, was a true visionary, and like her namesake Emily Dickinson, a remarkable woman born out of her time. A post-impressionist and modernist painter, writer, and thinker, a champion of First Nations peoples, an advocate for social justice, and an environmentalist, at a time when women of her age and social status were preoccupied with hand-painting china or watercolors, charitable causes, and invitations to tea parties. Today, Emily Carr is a Canadian legend, but in the 1920s and 30s, she was known only as an eccentric artist and landlady, pushing a beat-up old pram into downtown Victoria loaded with dogs, cats, birds, and a monkey. And that Javanese macaque monkey called Wu, whom Carr adopted in 1923, has become inextricably linked with Carr in the popular imagination. Moreover, Grant Hayter Menzies believes that Wu became inextricably connected to Carr's life and art, and develops his theory that Wu helped Carr overcome her childhood fear of monkeys, as well as a host of other fears that had paralyzed her as an artist. Fear and art cannot work together. And by welcoming the mischievous Wu into her life, Carr also welcomed a freedom that allowed a full blooming of her artistic expression. Hayter Menzies explains, "I think she really, really needed to have animals with her to be a functioning person, and above all, to be a functioning artist. Animals were the fulcrum of her greatness. And it's obvious in the ways that Emily wrote about Wu that the captive monkey freed Carr. Tragically, in 1937, after Carr was hospitalized due to heart failure, she arranged for Wu to be sent to the monkey house at Stanley Park Zoo. Bereft of Carr, Wu died alone in her cage only a year later. That decision casts a shadow over Carr's devotion to Wu and poses the question, how could the artist have given up her beloved animal companion to languish in a cage at Stanley Park Zoo? Part two of the book takes us on a journey in search of the answer to that question. Hayter Menzies was passionate about finding some sense of peace around the issue of Wu's premature death. In part two, Hayter Menzies recounts how he traveled from Victoria, British Columbia to Sunderland, Ontario to visit the Storybook Farm Primate Sanctuary. The mission statement of the sanctuary is, "Storybook Farm is a place of safety. We offer freedom from fear." Our imaginations might allow us to believe that those words could have been penned by the spirit of Emily Carr and her precious Wu. On this trip, Hayter Menzies learned about the life story of Pockets Warhol, a white-capped capuchin monkey who resides at the sanctuary, and how, in 2011, Pockets began creating paintings. His works are now in the collections of animal welfare pioneer Dr. Jane Goodall, among others worldwide, including Ricky Gervais. Sales benefit the sanctuary. And here the spirit of Emily Carr and her love for Wu surprisingly comes full circle in a kind of poetic symmetry. And it was here, at the sanctuary, where Hayter Menzies surprisingly discovers the answer to his burning question, which you will discover when you read the book. Near the end of her life, in 1945, Carr painted a final portrait of Wu. It portrays Wu sitting on a branch of an apple tree, holding an apple, looking like a wild monkey, not a captive. In his poignant interpretation of this painting, Hayter Menzies suggests that Emily was finally able to let Wu go free and to accept the wildness that was in herself. If you are an animal lover, an artist, an environmentalist, a social justice advocate, or simply a lover of a good read, this book is for you. And it's a lot more fun than a barrel of monkeys.
And with perfect timing, that was Joan McBride presenting Wu, the Monkey Who Inspired Emily Carr by Grant Hayter Menzies. Moving along to our second reader here in County Reads 2020, Shannon Cool. Shannon Cool is the executive director of the Prince Edward County Memorial Hospital Foundation, where she ensures on an ongoing basis that our county hospital is equipped with needed medical equipment, and she oversees the $16.5 million fundraising campaign, which will result in a new hospital for Prince Edward County. Before starting her role with Picton in 2018, Shannon was the director of leadership philanthropy for the University Hospitals Kingston Foundation, helping to secure over $67 million toward the Extraordinary People Innovative Healthcare Campaign. Shannon's career as a fundraiser began in 1986 when she started working in the arts with the McMichael Canadian Art Collection before moving on to the Royal Ontario Museum. There, she focused on corporate and foundation relations. She also went on from there to join the University of Toronto Medicine Development Team. In 2008, Shannon and her young family moved to Prince Edward County, and she was retained by Queen's University to help fundraise for the Faculty of Health Sciences, securing funds to build the $77 million School of Medicine building. Shannon Coole will be presenting A Girl Named Lovely by Catherine Porter.
Imagine the floor beneath you disappears and you are buried alive under rubble after falling four stories. Everything goes black. You gasp for clean air through the dust and dirt. Everything goes quiet. You are alone, and it takes 6 days before you are lifted back into the light. You are only 2 years old. Journalists are known to be good writers, but Catherine Porter, a foreign correspondent for the Toronto Star, turned her experiences into a beautifully written novel about a two-year-old girl who survived after being trapped for 6 days following the earthquake that took place in Haiti in 2010. This little girl, who is referred to as a miracle child, is the reason Catherine Porter went on her first trip to Haiti and is the reason why Catherine returned for many years to follow and quickly finds herself crossing the line from being a journalist to becoming a beloved member of a Haitian family. She is also the reason why Catherine wrote this book, titled A Girl Named Lovely. After receiving a promotion and landing her dream job as a foreign correspondent, Catherine found herself leaving the comfort of her home, her husband, and her young children to visit the foreign country, devastated by a massive earthquake, in search of someone else's child and the story that surrounds her. It's 10 o'clock p.m., and the Air Canada flight has landed in Port-au-Prince. This is Catherine's first visit to Haiti. Outside, the air was thick and warm, like a damp wool blanket. The smell of burning rubber filled my nostrils, Catherine writes. It was pitch black on the tarmac, except for a set of headlights from a truck. One aid worker was there to greet the arriving aid workers, excitedly reported that it had been a crazy 2 days. He rode on the back of a dump truck to get to the airport. We bought bags of lollipops to give to kids. We were jumping rope with them today. Catherine's first reaction was to think of him as some yahoo who'd come for a strange thrill and that he would be causing more harm than good. She quickly learns that first impressions can be wrong. When she first observed Good Samaritans, she started out thinking they were just going to get in the way of aid work. It didn't take her long to realize that they were offering spiritual medicine and that there is a need for that too when a country or community is healing. This book is thought-provoking, sometimes dark, and filled with inspiration and hope. It is so well written that I had to remind myself that these are real people and the experiences Catherine writes about actually took place. This book will have you grimacing, gasping with shock, laughing out loud, and may even bring you to tears as it did me. Seeing Haiti through Catherine's eyes makes me proud to be Canadian. She has the ability to break down the cultural and ethnic barriers. Beginning on page 147, Catherine shares with us that there were many people moved by their encounters with two-year-old Lovely, a Spanish catastrophe missionary who spent a short while in Haiti following the earthquake, emailed Catherine to let her know that while he was working there, he was visited by Lovely on a number of occasions. When his trip was over, he left without saying goodbye. He was heartbroken. He became overjoyed when he read Catherine's articles online and learned that Lovely was doing well. Something of my life has been left with that child, he wrote. This book is about Catherine's journey to help reunite Lovely with her lost family and contribute in some way toward putting Haiti back together and with a focus on health and the education system. Our current circumstances give us an opportunity to identify with the people in this book. Humans living across our entire planet are fighting the same virus, a virus that does not discriminate. Our world feels a little smaller right now, and there is a sense of connection and commonality with people everywhere. If you have ever wanted to visit Haiti or just want to know what it's like, this book will take you there. All of your senses will be awakened. You will feel that heat, smell the earth and aftermath of the earthquake, and feel what it is really like to feel thirsty and dry. Right now, we are all feeling grateful for things we took for granted just 2 months ago. This book is another reminder of how fortunate we are to have access to clean running water, electricity, and even things as simple as a floor to stand on and shoes on our feet. Living without these things is just a way of life and is accepted by Haitians. Canadians are generous people. In 2010, following the earthquake, as a country, we donated $282 million to Haiti. At the time, Michelle Jean was our head of state. She had been a Haitian refugee. At the time of the earthquake, Canadians felt a personal connection to Haiti. This is the book you must read now. It is a gift that will make everyone who reads it a better person.
That was Shannon Cool presenting A Girl Named Lovely by Catherine Porter.
This is County Reads on County FM. You've heard from Joe McBride and Shannon Cool. When we come back, Duncan Payne and Richard Johnson present the books they think you should read. Stay with 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county.
With all this physical distancing, either alone or with family, Books & Company wants to help keep things fun. Get books, puzzles, and games at Books & Company's website, PictonBookstore.com, and pick whatever you like. Orders can be placed on the website. You can call 476-3037 or email sales@PictonBookstore.com. Books & Company will arrange curbside pickup or delivery within the county. Start your adventure at home with Books & Company, and please stay safe and well.
Hey, this is Chris Walcott from Veenstra Plumbing. Do you have questions about your well, your septic, or leaky faucet? Or maybe you're just concerned about that funny smell in your water. Here at Veenstra Plumbing, we've been solving the county's water problems for over 25 years. We would love to help you with your plumbing and water needs, emergency or otherwise. Give us a call, 613-393-2262. That's 393-2262. Or visit us at veenstraplumbing.com. Veenstra Plumbing, where we strive to be good plumbers and good people.
They've been growing all winter, and now Lockyer's Country Gardens is open for the spring season. At Lockyer's, they believe it's essential to be able to purchase plants for your gardens. So all safety precautions are in place to guide you through the greenhouses, where you'll find the same great variety of lush plants and more. Bring home spring from Lockyer's Country Gardens. Open daily, just around the roundabout, east on County Road 1 in Picton, where quality grows.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Crombie. Most people call me Libby, and I'm a sales representative for Royal LePage here in beautiful Prince Edward County.
The Elizabeth Crombie Real Estate Team is grateful for the opportunity to help keep County Reads alive and well during the COVID-19 crisis. Reading is so important, mentally and emotionally. Every book gives you an opportunity to learn and explore, and where better to grow than right here in Prince Edward County.
I do love the county, and I love helping people with all their real estate needs. Call me at 476-2700. Why not live where you love to visit?
Welcome back to County Reads on County FM. I'm Lynn Pickering. You've heard Joe McBride and Shannon Cool promote their books, and now we go back to Ken Murray to introduce our final two presenters.
All right, for our third presenter today, we have Duncan Payne. Duncan was born and raised in England and went to the University of London. At university, he, and these are his words, scraped together a BSc in botany and zoology. Apparently, life in London in the late 60s was more interesting than plant anatomy. After university, Duncan worked in marketing, got thoroughly bored with business, and went into teaching, where every day was an adventure. For the next 30 years, Duncan taught high school sciences in England, Canada, and for 1 year in Australia. Along with teaching, his extracurriculars were coaching rugby, track and field, and theater. When Duncan retired, he and his wife Peggy moved to the county, arriving in 2009. Here he helped coach rugby at PECI and now volunteers with County Kids Read, teaching reading at PECI, and he and Peggy both row with the Isle of Quinte Skiff Club. Reading has always been a passion for Duncan, and he belongs to a book club. Duncan Payne will be presenting The Marrow Thieves by Cherie Demoline.
The book that I am defending for County Reads is The Marrow Thieves by Métis writer Cherie Demoline. The Marrow Thieves is a dystopian novel and a coming-of-age story set in the not-so-distant future. Unlike many dystopian novels where heroic white people save the world, the major characters in this story are indigenous people, and they are not saving the world. The Marrow Thieves is set in Canada and deals with a world where climate change has occurred with devastating results. Cities have been wiped out or crumbled into the sea as sea levels have risen. Mass migrations have occurred, along with food shortages and starvation. Polluted water sources and extreme weather have resulted in millions of deaths. The people who survived have experienced severe trauma, and as a consequence of this trauma, have lost the ability to dream. The only people who can still dream are Indigenous peoples. Canadian government scientists have decided that the key to dreaming lives in the webs of bone marrow printed in the Indigenous population's bones. Using past history, institutes similar to the residential school system have been set up to capture Indigenous people of all ages so they can harvest their bone marrow to give to non-Indigenous people a cure. It is yet another genocide for a fictitious cure. The Marrow Thieves is a very relevant book for today's world, which is in the early stages of climate change, and therefore serves as a warning for us all. Against this background, the novel centres on a group of 5 First Nation children and teenagers. Frenchie, Cheeboy, the twins Tree and Zeguan, Slopper, Wab, Riri, and eventually Rosie. This motley group is led by 2 elders, Miguan, who calls them all family, and Minerva. They are escaping the decimated south of Ontario by heading north and traveling in torrential rain, cold, and then snow showers to forage for food, hunting, and being hunted themselves by recruiters. They are evading capture and are seeking to find larger Indigenous groups who are in the same position and better able to defend themselves. The Marrow Thieves is a cautionary tale, warning us about the possible consequences of climate change. The novel tells a good story with well-nuanced characters who are real people. It is also an emotional story of loss of family, friends, lovers, and community. Within the group, there is compassion, true loyal friendships, and romance. Despite what has happened to the world, there is hope and how we will survive and continue to survive. Miguan is the storyteller, and his stories tell Indigenous history to his group. For us, his stories describe Indigenous oppression, which under certain circumstances, history can tragically repeat itself. In the Indigenous tradition, there are coming to stories where all the group describe where they have come from, the trauma they have experienced, how they escaped, and which tribe they belong to. By telling their stories, they are on the road to healing. Under the elders' guidance, the group follow a traditional way of life, which gives them focus and helps them forget about the past and is another route to healing. It is for the above reasons that I am defending my choice of book, The Marrow Thieves.
That was Duncan Payne presenting The Marrow Thieves by Cherie Demoline. And now for our 4th presenter in County Reads 2020, we will call on Richard Johnson. County resident since 1995, Richard owns By Chadsey's Cairns Winery with his wife and winemaker, Vida. He was one of the first wineries to open in Prince Edward County, and he chaired the Wine Growers Association for most of its formative years. He did 2 stints as president of First Nations Technical Institute in Tiendanega and 1 as president of Centennial College in Toronto. an English and history graduate from Trent University's inaugural class, Richard was elected four times as the MPP for Scarborough West. He's known for his work in education, poverty, and disability issues. He ran for the leadership of the NDP against Bob Rae and served as chair of the Council of Regents, governing body of Ontario's colleges. He was the first chair of the EPIO, saved the Toronto Islands community with his 1991 report, and led Ontario's support for the democratization of the Baltic states after they broke away from the Soviet Union. Finally, easing into actual retirement, he is looking forward to reading more great Canadian literature. Richard Johnson will be presenting Bushrunner by Mark Bury.
Well, as an ex-politician, I'm usually into fiction, as most people would imagine, never leaving a life that was real, others would think. Vida reads all the nonfiction. This time, however, I've chosen a nonfiction book because at the age of 73, just about 74, someone who worked with Indigenous communities, studied Indigenous history, and thought he knew a lot about Canadian history, I was shocked to be, have my views about Pierre Esprit Radisson totally changed by this book by Mr. Bury. It is a most remarkable book. It is a preposterously improbable life. It is like fiction. He's basically, as somebody put it, our Forrest Gump. He basically survived being captured, tortured by the Mohawks, writing a journal for the King of England, being present for the Great Fire of London, being in England for the plague, being captured by pirates, and being awarded the improbable title of the first white person to find Minnesota, which I'm not sure was a great help to anyone. At any rate, he is also the person who, along with Groseilliers, or Groseilliers, as we used to call them in elementary school in the 1950s, helped form the Hudson Bay Company, the first major corporation of Canada. He's a bit of a scoundrel. He's totally innocent of any of the sort of afflictions of the time. That is, people who came here to colonize imperial views or wanted to be missionaries and change people. He adapted to life with the native communities remarkably, even if he was a great betrayer. His first family, Mohawk family, captured him when he was 15 years of age. And when he ran away from them and killed in the process one or two people, he never thought he'd be recaptured by them, but he was, and was tortured in a way which would normally have ended with his death. But somehow, because he was this remarkably charming man, even at the age of 16 and 17, he talked his way out of it, as he did every time he seemed to be captured or caught being a traitor to one side or the other. He worked for the Dutch against the English, worked for the English against the French. He was really quite amazing. But what's most remarkable about the book is that he was not a noble. He was basically born on the streets of Paris and should never have had a life that was known about, let alone in the person who wrote this remarkable journal. First edition, as I say, was written for Charles I as a series of stories about the wonderful indigenous life in North America. But the second one has only just been discovered in the last century and reveals so much about early Canadian life. The savagery of it, on the one hand, although, as the writer puts it, no less savage than the kind of tortures that went on through the zeal of religion in Europe at the time. And it gives us an account of the early years in North America, which are really quite phenomenal and not duplicated anywhere. I don't think any Canadian should go much longer without reading this story. It's a hard read. It's not the kind of story where you're going to pick it up tomorrow morning and read it again like our first presenter. This is one which I had to sit back and reflect upon for a long time. He was basically selling pots pans, knives, hatchets, lugging them across North America to make a living and doing the best that he could. And it's the truly remarkable story, which I suggest to everybody is a must read, brilliantly documented. If you're interested in, as I am, the authenticity of the accounts, it's all footnoted brilliantly and is a powerful, powerful read. Before I let you know.
Okay, come on here. That was Richard Johnson presenting Bush Runner by Mark Bourie. So we've heard four presenters speaking about four engaging books, and I have a single question that I want to ask of each of these presenters about the books they're talking about. It's going to be the same question, and we're going to go in reverse order this time. So we're actually going to begin with Richard. But everybody, listen closely. Here's where I come from on this. You might know in my other life, I'm a writer, and I believe that every good book has at least one moment that stands out. It's sometimes subjective to the reader. Sometimes there are many moments, but there's one moment that stands out. When you look back, think back on the book you've talked about, what stands out for you long after the book is done? It could be a moment that's joyful or sorrowful or enlightening or anything on the spectrum of human emotions. But what was that moment in this book for you? If you could give a brief answer to that question, again, we will we'll begin with Richard.
Well, this book is, it's almost impossible to do because there are so many shocking things in it all the way through. I mean, you think about the story of Adam Dallar and the massacre at the Long Sioux, our Alamo. I had no idea that Radisson came across his body and the bodies of those that were killed hanging from the trees. And these images of early Canada that come through this tiny, tiny population of whites in a land of, that still at that point was very, very well populated by indigenous people. It was really shocking to me and made me reflect a lot on just how impossible it was that those people survived in these tiny communities and left us this country that we have today.
Thank you, Richard. We will now ask the same question of Duncan Payne. Duncan, when you look back on the book you presented, what is the moment that lingers with you?
There were a lot of joyful moments in the book, and if I talk about those, I'll give the ending of the book away. One moment that did stand out for me was when Frenchie was out hunting, and he was sitting in a clearing, and the moose walked into the clearing, saw the moose. This moose represented for them would be probably a week or maybe 2 weeks of food at least. He looked at the moose, and he decided not to shoot the moose. And the reason being was because he didn't want to become like the marrow hunters. And that was a powerful moment that showed that he did not want to become like the rest of the population.
Thank you, Duncan. Now we'll go to Shannon Cool. Shannon, when you look back on the book you have presented today, and you think of the moment that sticks with you, what is it?
There were many wonderful, wonderful moments, but the one that really stuck with me is when Catherine took a trip, one of her trips to Haiti. She brought with her one of the donors who had contributed to helping this family. And one of the visits, one of the experiences she shared with this donor was taking the family for the second time in their entire lives down to the ocean for a swim. And the intimacy of that experience really resonated with me, and the closeness and trust that Catherine had established with the entire family, and especially the children. And I'll just, it's a short paragraph, but this was one of the last visits she would have to Haiti, or at least was considering that this would be one of the last visits. And they were on their way back. They arrived to the airport or to the hotel. And with that, Catherine hauled open the minivan door. Paul and I were immediately soaked by the pouring rain. By the time we scooted into the building, my tears were crashing down just as hard. I pressed my eyes, embarrassed to be crying so unabashedly in front of a man I had just met. It brought me to tears when I read that. I'm going to cry right now. Because she loved that family so much and couldn't imagine leaving them again. So it was very moving.
Thank you, Shannon. And we'll turn the same question over to Joan McBride. Joan, when you think back on the book you presented today, what is the moment that sticks with you?
Again, there are a few, but certainly not going to disclose the one that happens at the primate sanctuary when that question was answered for Grandheader Menzies. But there is a description toward the end of part one of, I'm going to get teary-eyed too, Shannon, of Wu at the monkey house. And when you understand, when you've read part one and you understand the respect, the love, the contribution that this monkey made to Emily Carr's life, and then you see that Wu hardly ever came out of his little cage that he was in. Some of her friends went to visit and they would bring nuts and treats and stuff, but most people who went by would mimic him and try to, you know, make mockery of him, throw gum wads at him, cigarette butts, and so on. And so the very idea of this animal being so poorly treated after the very precious contribution in life that he'd had with Emily Carr is kind of tears my heart apart. But it also relates very strongly to why Grant wrote this book, which he addresses. And again, if I could just quote quickly, he actually, this is a quote from Grant, like Emily Carr, I just want us to take animals seriously. That seems such a tall order for many people, but I believe we are reaching the tipping point where many more of us, even those for whom animals may not have a place in their lives, understand and support the moral and compassionate idea that animals are to be taken seriously, treated with respect, and loved.
Thank you, Joan.
You're welcome.
Well, have you made up your mind? Up next, each presenter has a final opportunity to gain your vote. Stay with County Reads on County FM, brought to you by Books & Company, Beanstra Plumbing, Elizabeth Crombie Real Estate Team, and Lockyer's Country Gardens. You're listening to 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Crombie. Most people call me Libby, and I'm a sales representative for Royal LePage here in beautiful Prince Edward County.
The Elizabeth Crombie Real Estate Team is grateful for the opportunity to help keep County Reads alive and well during the COVID-19 crisis. Reading is so important, mentally and emotionally. Every book gives you an opportunity to learn and explore, and where better to grow than right here in Prince Edward County.
I do love the county, and I love helping people with all their real estate needs. Call me at 476-2700. Why not live where you love to visit?
Hey, this is Chris Walcott from Veenstra Plumbing. Do you have questions about your well, your septic, or leaky faucet? Or maybe you're just concerned about that funny smell in your water. Here at Veenstra Plumbing, we've been solving the county's water problems for over 25 years. We would love to help you with your plumbing and water needs, emergency or otherwise. Give us a call, 613-393-2262. That's 393-2262. Or visit us at veenstraplumbing.com. Veenstra Plumbing, where we strive to be good plumbers and good people.
They've been growing all winter, and now Lockyer's Country Gardens is open for the spring season. At Lockyer's, they believe it's essential to be able to purchase plants for your gardens, so all safety precautions are in place to guide you through the greenhouses, where you'll find the same great variety of lush plants and more. Bring home spring from Lockyer's Country Gardens, open daily just around the roundabout, east on County Road 1 in Picton, where quality grows.
With all this physical distancing, either alone or with family, Books & Company wants to help keep things fun. Get books, puzzles, and games at Books & Company's website, PictonBookstore.com, and pick whatever you like. Orders can be placed on the website. You can call 476-3037 or email sales@PictonBookstore.com. Books & Company will arrange curbside pickup or delivery within the county. Start your adventure at home with Books & Company, and please stay safe and well.
You're listening to County Reads on County FM. Now we go back to our moderator, Ken Murray, and a final word from our four presenters.
Thank you, Lynn. Well, it's time to wrap things up and turn it over to you, the listeners, to see who or see which book will be the one book that everyone should read right now. And what we're going to do is go and have a one-minute presentation by each of our presenters. We will begin with Joan McBride, who will talk to us once again about Woo, The Monkey Who Inspired Emily Carr by Grant Hayter Menzies.
Woo, The Monkey Who Inspired Emily Carr by Grant Hayter Menzies is a kind of three-for-the-price-of-one bargain. First, it offers a fascinating and comprehensive biography of Emily Carr that will set you wanting to learn more about her. I myself had no idea that she was such a good writer, and I've begun to work my way through her books. Second, there are lots of great animal stories, with the star character being the mischievous Woo. These stories will make you laugh and make you cry. And third, the book offers an introduction to the remarkable rescue work that is being done at Storybook Farm Primate Sanctuary in Sunderland, Ontario. Who knew? All three storylines are bundled up and woven together in a tender, truthful reflection of the connection between art, animals, and our world. Three's a charm.
And that was Joan McBride presenting Woo, The Monkey Who Inspired Emily Carr by Grant Hayter Menzies. So we'll now turn our attention to Shannon Cool. Shannon will give a final pitch for A Girl Named Lovely by Catherine Porter.
Everyone must read this gracefully written book. This book will move you. It is your opportunity to visit Haiti, learn about its culture, and meet the Haitian people. Catherine's ability to share her personal journey and her intimate relationship with Lovely's family will leave you with no choice but to fall in love with this family as well. Their resilience, drive, and relentless determination to survive is motivated by their love for one another. Family to them is everything and is the reason they keep going. We all need to be inspired, especially right now. Even though this book talks about hardship, it also speaks to the power of one's action and the proof that each one of us can affect an outcome and change the direction of a predetermined destiny. Catherine wonders to herself, how was it that Lovely survived 6 days under the rubble? But more importantly, why had she survived? It's a question Catherine mulled over for years. All the death she'd seen in Haiti, all the poverty and dejection, and yet here she was, not just surviving, but thriving. If you want to know what Lovely's answer is, you will have to read the book.
Thank you, Shannon. And we'll now go to Duncan Payne, who will give a final pitch for The Marrow Thieves by Cherie Demoline.
Climate change is an issue that has importance for us all, and The Marrow Thieves makes the issue compelling. The book gives us a somewhat exaggerated version of what could happen to the Earth during climate change and the consequences of melting permafrost, ruptured pipelines, rising water levels, and the result of government policies that do not protect the environment. The stories told in The Marrow Thieves gives us a window into the indigenous world, helping us to understand the traditional way of life, which helps us along the way to coming to reconciliation. The Marrow Thieves represent hope, and that hope can survive in the worst of circumstances.
Thank you, Duncan. And for our final pitch, we will now go to Richard Johnson, who will talk to us once again about Bushrunner by Mark Bury.
Bushrunner is a nonfiction that reads like it has to be fiction. And it really awakens your sense of what it means to be Canadian. Next time you take a walk in the woods, you just feel totally different after you've read this book. And you really imagine what it was like to be one of those early pioneers who knew nothing about what they were facing. A young man who learned several Indigenous languages, who, although totally uneducated, was able to write two major journals, has had an effect on many, many people. Connections run right to the modern day through the ancestors of Winston Churchill, who he's connected to Lady Diana and her family, the French court, and people who come out of that whole French nobility during that period. It's really quite a staggering story, and leaves you quite changed after you've read it.
Thank you, Richard. Well, Lynn, I'll turn it over to you. This is it. We've got four great books, four fantastic presentations, and wow, it's up to our listeners.
Thanks, Ken. So there you have it, County Reads 2020. Now it's time for you to have your say. Go to the library website, peclibrary.org, and vote for the book you think every county resident should read. Or place your vote by phone. Call 613-476-5962 and leave your name and the name of the book you're voting for. That's 613-476-5962. We'll also post the phone number and a link on 99.3 County FM's Facebook page. Deadline to vote is midnight this Thursday, May 28th. Then, listen for the winner on next Sunday's edition of the County Writes the County Reads. Thanks to our County Reads presenters, Shannon Poole, Richard Johnson, Joan McBride, and Duncan Payne. Our moderator, Ken Murray. Our techie whiz, Pat Larkin. The Prince Edward County Public Library. And our sponsors, Books & Company, Beamster Plumbing, Elizabeth Crombie Real Estate Team, and Lockyer's Country Gardens. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Lynn Pickering for 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county.